You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And Brendan, how are you doing as he joins us from Edmonton?
Happy Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween to everybody. And Merry Halloween. Brendan, are you taking your daughter out trick-or-treating tonight?
It's going to be spooktacular.
Really? Does she have a costume?
No, that's not my job. I stay at home. No. Usually I stay at home in a darkened house, but now I have joined the, you kind of got to go. What do they say? Go along to get along? So I gotta hand out some candies.
What kind of candies? You're not one of those households that gives out like toothbrushes and dental floss, are you?
I take personal offense to that, Kelsey.
Well, I mean, you seem at times to be rather conservative, so.
Yes. Well, I went to the health food store today, and I got a big bag of carob, and I'm in the process of making some healthy carob snacks.
Sweet.
Some dried fruit and covered in carob, and then I'll present it with a nice coconut topping to the little children as they come by.
Yes, very nutritious. Although, a good parent wouldn't allow their children to eat that because it wouldn't be packaged from the store, and there could be, a syringe in it or whatnot.
Well, I'm hoping that I'll get some hippie kids.
Yeah. I remember reading somewhere that, in fact, all those stories are complete urban legends, where people put razor blades in apples and whatnot.
I think I heard that. I think I heard that as well.
Yeah, but yeah.
How do you know anything anymore? Everything's a freaking urban legend. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Who are you supposed to trust? Who are you supposed to trust that is trying to wrap you into some artificial hysteria?
You can only trust yourself and what your gut says, not what your mind says.
We should all go more from the gut, I think.
Yeah. Ignore facts and science. Go with your gut. I don't know how we're going to segue this into mixed martial arts, but we'll try. We've got an interesting show coming up today. We've got Mark Kerr is going to be on the program. We're looking forward to that. And as well, I should mention that. Well, actually, the interview's pre-taped, so yeah, you should all be looking forward to that. I should say, but I do make mention of the fact that the IFL is Saturday night, November 2nd, and of course, November 2nd is this Thursday, so I want to apologize for that. So when you're listening to the interview, if anyone in the Northwest is planning on going to the IFL, you should show up on Thursday, not Saturday, because Thursday is the event.
So Mark Kerr is no longer the smashing machine, but now...
The specimen. I think it's one of those situations where there's multiple nicknames, like a Chris Lieben. He's got a few nicknames. I think just flavor of the month kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the smashing machine.
No, I prefer a smashing machine. I think at one point he was called the Titan as well, wasn't he? Mark Kerr, Mark Titan Kerr.
Isn't someone else the specimen?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually,
I think what we should protest really is the profound lack of imagination in MMA, where you actually have a limited amount of A-class fighters, and many of them have the same nickname.
Yeah, there should be a law against that. Everyone can only sanction one name in the state of Nevada or wherever, but,
that should be a trademark.
Yeah, it should be like a unified... They should unify mixed martial arts rules for one, and they should also only allow one nickname.
But there are there's good news, though, coming from the CFL that next year there could be the rebirth of the Ottawa Rough Riders, bringing
yes.
back into the nine-team league two teams named Rough Riders.
Yeah, well, we've discussed that before, and actually,
I got to rethink this nickname thing.
And I was just recording a bumper the other day, and that's one thing, a little ad about the fact that we've got the show on iTunes now, etc. And I mentioned that's in fact I've received several emails where people wonder if we made that up.
What the hell's a bumper?
Well, like what you put between segments.
Oh.
It's low budget podcast talk.
I like this radio jargon.
Right. And speaking of nicknames, we're going to have Bill the Butcher, which is one of my favorite nicknames in mixed martial arts. Bill the Butcher Mahood will be on the program. Fighter, promoter, King of the Cage, Canada matchmaker. He'll be on. King of the Cage Canada's got a couple shows coming up, one this weekend and then later in the month in Edmonton. So he's going to be on the program filling us in on what's in store for King of the Cage Canada in the next little while. So that's an interesting segment as well. And let's get to it then, Brendan. Let's bring Mark Kerr on, who's taking Fighting Mike Whitehead this Thursday, November 2nd in Portland, Oregon. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
The International Fight League returns to Portland's Memorial Coliseum Thursday, November 2nd for the World Team Championship Semifinals. Hometown hero Matt Lindland leads his team, the Wolfpack, into battle against Boss Rutan's Anaconda. And Pat Miletich pits his team, the Silverbacks, against Carlos Newton's Dragon.
Plus, two super fights you don't want to miss.
The much-anticipated return of world champion Mark Kerr as he takes on Mike Whitehead. And the grudge match of Daniel Gracie against Alan Goed. Get your tickets now. It all happens Thursday, November 2nd at the Memorial Coliseum in Portland when Matt Lindland's Wolfpack takes on Boss Rutan's Anaconda and Pat Miletich's Silverbacks battle Carlos Newton's Dragons in the International Fight League World Team Championship Semifinals.
And great super fight action.
Tickets on sale now at the Rose Quarter box office, 877-789-7673, or online at rosequarter.com. The International Fight League. Pure sport. Are subject to change.
The best offer MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter Shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items, like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight Shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now from Portland, Oregon, is the specimen, Mark Kerr. Mark, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. Mark, of course, is going to be partaking in the super fight this weekend, November 2nd, in the IFL against Mike Whitehead. And I guess my first question for you, Mark, and probably a lot of people are curious, who have you been training with to get ready for this fight?
You know, I went out and I started training with Boss, and just to rekindle that relationship and... you know, with his guys getting ready for the show, the Anacondas and stuff like that, you know, it's just a really good fit. I ended up being in Vegas for about 10 days and in California for about 3 weeks, and really had just some really good training. Mark, to get this out of the way real quick, I've been following MMA for, I don't know, since the early 90s or so, but I just sat down last week with my wife and watched The Smashing Machine.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could quickly fill me in, but what are your reflections on that documentary? Because it was an excellent documentary. But my first question was, a lot of fighters have been portrayed in reality television now. They go on the reality show, and some of their comments are, I wasn't really portrayed correctly. You know, this is not reality television, but a legitimate documentary. But still, what are your reflections on how you came off in that documentary?
You know what? In the end, when you look, you know, when I look back on it, you know, I came off just exactly what was going on in my life. And, you know, a lot of that, when I went back with the filmmakers and they finally came up with an edited product and we sat down and we watched it, I said, you know, just let it stand. You know, it's either going to stand where I'm going to have a whole bunch of people on my side that are going to be rooting for me. I'm going to have a whole bunch of people saying, wow, I can't believe that he did that. And, you know, about 4 years later, you know, it's proven to be the first part of that, you know, where a lot of people have, you know, sided with me, they're rooting for me, they've become real, you know, diehard Mark Kerr fans, just waiting to see what I do next. And, you know, it portrayed me pretty accurately, you know, and I think that's why, you know, most people that watch the film get the idea that the reason why the film worked is obviously because of the storyline, and two, is just because of the brutal honesty that I was able to, you know, communicate on film.
Well, it was pretty remarkable to me because first of all, if you've been following MMA really closely for the last few years, you don't see that brutality that you saw in your early fights. So it's a pretty brutal thing to watch at the beginning, but still, You come off as a very sympathetic character. And like I said, I watched it with my wife, and she really enjoyed it. Yeah. Because there's a real humanity to that, you know, that you don't see in the more polished MMA productions now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I think that's, you know, for as gritty as it was, is for as much, you know, as, you know, I say to most people that haven't watched it, you know, if you can get past the first 5-10 minutes of it, you know, you'll be into a great story. You know, at the beginning of fighting, yeah, it had a very brutal aspect to it, and that was, you know, part of the attraction for the minority, not the, you know, mainstream public. You know, they didn't want to see that kind of gore. And, you know, that's why, you know, over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, you know, mixed martial arts has really made an effort to clean up that image, you know, and portray it for what it is. You know, I mean, all the people that participate in mixed martial arts, in my opinion, I mean, they're great athletes. You know, they're well-trained, they're well-disciplined, and, you know, the mixed martial arts today is the evolution of the stuff that I went through.
Now, Mark, that documentary ended up filming, I believe it concluded in 2000 or 2001, if I'm not mistaken. And then your last fight was in 2004, so maybe fill in for your fans and just MMA observers in general. What has the last 3 years been like in the year of for Mark Kerr?
You know, right after I got back from that loss in February of 2004, you know, I got home and I found out that I was going to be a dad. And so for the last 3 years, if you count it, my son just turned 2 last month, and if you really count it, the 9 months of pregnancy, that's basically what I've been doing.
Oh, wow.
You know, just trying to be a lot more stable, you know, to be able to get into doing some personal training and, you know, a couple other things in business and, you know, to really just try to, you know, buckle down and create a stable environment to bring a kid into this world and then continue that environment with, you know, just being a consistent father and, you know, things like that. So, you know, I mean, that's basically been the last 3 years, just really trying to participate on that level to, you know, to really draw from another part of life, you know, and it's been probably one of the most rewarding things I've done to date.
So I guess my question to you, Mark, is how do you feel coming back to a sport that has been evolving so fast? You were watching your early fights. You were really on the cutting edge because you didn't simply have the ground and pound formula, but you had some decent stand up. You could throw hard low kicks, and you were working with Baz to be what was really the sort of prototype of an MMA fighter today. So how do you feel now that again the sport's evolved while you've been out? How do you feel coming back to that? Are you comfortable competing at the level you're going to have to compete at?
A lot of what's gone on in this training camp leading up to this was just figuring out, you know, what were the components that had really diminished skill wise, and you know, a lot of it was just saying, gosh, you know, me looking at fighting, just like you're saying, the evolution of it has changed. You know, you can no longer go out and dominate a guy in one area and win the fight because a lot of the organizations make you fight in all aspects of the fight. You know, they're not going to let you lay on the ground and try to manipulate that position to where, you know, you can stay on top of a guy for a whole round. They're going to pull you up. They're going to make you use your hands, your feet, and your knees. So, you know, looking at it is just trying to, you know, going into this training and preparing for this fight, you know, is looking at it saying, you know, what aspects do I need to work on the most? You know, I've spent, you know, the majority of my life wrestling, as most people know, and, you know, the aspects that have diminished was some of my striking skills, some of my ability to be able to pick up punches and kicks coming towards me and stuff. So I've spent the last, you know, couple of months just really trying to focus back in on that and realizing that, you know, fighters aren't the same. You know, there are no more easy fights out there. You know, you might have a guy go out and dominate another guy, but, you know, when I say there are no more easy fights, meaning that your training leading up to a fight, regardless of the opponent, has to be absolutely just spot on. You know, you have to put the time and the effort into it to be able to go out there and compete because on any given day, any of the fighters out there, they can beat you.
Now, breaking down your upcoming fight with Mike Whitehead and talking about on the same thread as far as the skill set that you have to have against a fighter like Mike, and of course Mike is a very accomplished wrestler, as are yourself. What do you think, Mark, looking at a guy like Whitehead? I mean, where do you have to try to attack Mike, and where do you think you have the advantages over him?
You know, I think I have the advantage of having some experience, being able to, you know, the fights that I've had have been under a lot of pressure.
You know, they've been in front of huge audiences. They've been in front of live television. They've been in front of, you know, just about every type of audience you can imagine. And, you know, that amount of experience I bring to the fight, meaning that prior to the fight I can keep my nerves in check and, you know, realize what's going to go on and realize, you know, how my body's going to respond and how I'm going to respond emotionally. You know, as far as strategy for the fight, you know, I said, you know, I just want to go out there and get in a fight. And, you know, hopefully some of the reactions that I've had in the past will take over, that I'll understand what has to be done if I have to stay up on my feet and I have to fight and I have to use my elbows and, you know, punches and kicks to soften them up, or, you know, if I feel like, you know, I'm outmatched in that area, that I can control the fight and bring them to the ground. You know, a lot of that stuff is really, you can plan whatever you want to plan, but then you have to get into a fight. And when you get into a fight, there really is, you know, game planning is, you know, it doesn't go out the window. You know, but game planning changes minute by minute. It's like a battlefield.
Mark, what was it like going back to train with Boss? And some of the most remarkable episodes of the movie for me were seeing your relationship unfold with Boss, and in a sense of how tender he was towards you, which is ironic from the big El Guapo. So, what was it like reestablishing that relationship with him?
You know, it was probably one of the best decisions that I made. I just know that where I am and how I need to be motivated, and one person that I listen to and I don't really question what he has to say is Boss. You know, some other guys that I've trained with and been, you know, trained by, you know, I might go, well, I'm not going to do this today. And some of them may be a little intimidated by me and go, okay, well, let's change it. And, you know, Boss, for the most part, just says, this is what we're going to do today, and, you know, do it the best you can. And he tells you brutally honest whether you had a crappy practice or whether you had a good practice. And, you know, a lot of that, I think, towards the end of my career, you know, towards the end of, you know, it's not my career, but towards the end of when I was fighting, you know, regularly, was, you know, I didn't have enough people in my corner to be just brutally honest with me. And, you know, it's one of the things that I appreciate the most coming through this training cycle is, you know, being able to have that.
You mentioned that you had a child, and congratulations on that, and being a father.
Thank you.
What was part of the thought process outside of that, then, to make the decision to return to mixed martial arts this year?
Well, you know, it started back in January. Back in January, I was starting to think about it a little bit more. It started to be something that consistently cropped in my head every day. And most people don't understand, you know, when I had my last fight in 2000, I dismantled my website. I changed my email address. I basically changed my phone numbers. I had no forwarding address. So for a couple of years, no one could get a hold of me. And, you know, I didn't really watch fighting. I didn't follow it. I didn't know what was going on with it. I really tried to walk away from it. And then this past January, you know, I started watching an event here and an event there and started watching stuff. And, you know, kind of just, you know, I watch a fight and then find myself not being able to sleep at night. You know, I get this feeling in my stomach of like, oh, man. And it's not a feeling of nervousness. It's like anticipation. You know, I close my eyes and try to go to sleep and start rerunning fights. You know, how I could have done better, or how I could have trained better, or how I could have did this. And so it kind of gave me, well, you know, maybe it's not totally out of my system. And then when the IFL got in contact with me and brought me out for their inaugural show in Atlantic City in April, you know, I talked to Kurt Otto, the commissioner, and Kurt had given me an achievement award just for sharing my documentary and saying that was in part some of the inspiration that led to the IFL. I started really, really thinking about it. And then I approached him in late summer and said, you know what, I think I want to fight. And he said, okay, let's get you a fight. And that was basically how the process went.
So that's how the fight came about with the IFL. You were also supposed to fight Wes Sims, and you had a hand injury and had to drop out of that. And I remember there was talk at the time that you might actually end up fighting Wes. Did that organization ever end up contacting you after your hand healed up at all? Or
The ACF in Denver?
Yeah.
You know what? It ended up being one of those situations where, you know, without going into this long, drawn-out explanation, you know, the company had just a lot of different issues that were going on. You know, the founder of the company is currently serving an 8-year prison term for securities fraud. It ended up being a financial mess up there. So, you know, the idea was that I was going to be able to fight Wes later on that summer, and it just never came to fruition because some of the problems they were having.
Okay.
how did it affect your decision coming back into MMA, knowing that your peers from the turn of the century, around 2000, were still actually competing at such a high level? So, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Mark Coleman, who you fought alongside with in Pride, is fighting the best fighter in the world. How much did that affect your decision that a lot of your old peers still had active and very successful MMA careers?
Yeah, you know, what affected me, you know, in a way that is positive, you know, just looking at a lot of these guys, knowing that you're going to have the day-to-day bumps and bruises and strains and sprains and things like that, but, you know, I mean, they're manageable. You know, I'm not in a position where, you know, I have, you know, broken bones or torn ligaments and, you know, just stuff that I really, you know, would not be able to manage a training camp to get ready for a fight, you know. And I've come through this one, you know, I've said it before kind of jokingly, you know, the first month, I think I woke up every single day and I said, this sucks. This really sucks. You know, I don't know if I could do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, then gradually it was, excuse me, gradually it was, you know, one practice went better, and then another practice went better, and then another one went better, and then a week went better, and then, you know, 2 weeks went better, and then 3 weeks, and, you know, you find yourself in a little bit of groove, and that's what I started to discover, you know, is I just had to get through that initial, you know, really, you know, crappy feeling that I knew I was going to feel, and be able to take that and just build on it, and you know, I feel good, you know, I feel really good.
Along that same thread, we've already talked and discussed the evolution of fighters and the evolution of the game itself, Mark, but and as well as Brendan alluded to, having some of your peers that you competed with back 2000 still active. But when you left the sport, Mark, did you ever in your wildest imagination conceive that the sport would get as big as it is as far as its popularity in both America and Japan?
Well, you know, I knew that over in Tokyo, you know, I knew that they had, you know, achieved what they had set out to achieve. You know, they could put, you know, like three, four good bouts on a card, and they could sell out a, you know, 60,000-seat arena.
Yeah.
They really achieved that level of success, and, you know, I'd like to believe that I was part of helping Pride do that. I was on board with, you know, the show number two, mm-hmm. and, you know, helping them do that. And, you know, I knew that they had the formula. And I didn't see exactly that the American market would explode like it has. And a lot of it, and I was just joking with the filmmakers the other day when I was talking with them, is, you know, my documentary aired, and then 3 years later, you know, Ultimate Fighting is, you know, one of the most popular things in America.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to draw that kind of correlation, you can. You know, but I you know, the ratings and stuff that we got back from HBO when they originally aired my documentary was that it went out that first night with having a marginal lead in an old rerun episode of Oz, and it still pulled almost 3 million people to watch it that first night.
Wow.
So, you know, who knows? Who knows? So what's the next step? What's the next step for you if you have a successful fight back, you feel good? What's the next step? Where are you looking after the IFL, or are you looking to establish a relationship with the IFL?
Well, you know, I'm definitely looking to establish a relationship. You know, I had a conversation last week with Commissioner Kurt Otto, and, you know, Kurt had said to me, you know, in not so uncertain terms, you know, he just said, you know, we'd like to have you as part of this organization. He said, my eventual goal is to have you participate as a coach and on any other level that you want to, meaning that if I wanted to have another super fight with this company, that it's available to me. You know, if I wanted to be able to, you know, get in the production side and try to do some color commentating, they would give me an opportunity to do that as well. You know, with the busy schedule the IFL has coming up for 2007, I think it'll lend a lot of opportunities for me to be able to work with them and be able to, you know, help them grow this company to where I know it can be. You know, but immediately, you know, it's I say this kind of, you know, half jokingly, but, you know, either win, lose, or draw, you know, the overall questions that I wanted to answer for, you know, for this event was to see if I could get into shape, you know, see if I could, you know, have the dedication to be able to do that, and then, you know, if my body could hold up, and either win, lose, or draw, you know, I'll have another fight, you know, in December, and then hopefully back with the IFL at the beginning of next year.
Mark, you mentioned some of the previous Pride cards that you fought on and how they'd have four or five solid bouts. And when you look at this fight, outside of yours, of course, which is one of the super fights, what are your thoughts on the team matchups? I mean, from my perspective, when you look at some of the fights that are going to be outside of yours on Saturday night as well, Ivan Menjivar versus Palaszewski, Joe Dirksen versus Ryan McGivern, Rory Markham. I mean, the list goes on. It's an outstanding card.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know what? And this is the hard part is that, you know, a lot of the fighters on the team don't have that recognition like, you know, a lot of the guys that fight have fought in the UFC. So, you know, for people that are not tuning into this, they're missing some great, young, upcoming fighters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had the fortune of training with the Anacondas. Even though that they're going against wrestlers, you know, I still was out there training, and, you know, they train as hard as anybody out there. And, you know, I'm looking forward to just the overall card, you know. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Even though I'll be fighting that night, they'll be watching the fight.
Yeah.
One last question, and I'll take two questions. So, how do you have any nagging injuries that are keeping nagging you that you had from your previous successes, or are you coming in fresh? And number two, you're coming back onto the market, as it were, as a hot property because there's such a scarcity of good, legitimate heavyweight fighters. Now, I wanted to ask you, as a legitimate heavyweight fighter, why is that? Why do we see the weight divisions so stacked except for heavyweight?
You know, that's a question that I can't answer that. That just seems like the weirdest thing in the world that you wouldn't have, you wouldn't have it 5-6 deep, you know, at heavyweight. And, I mean, you looked at one time, there was, you know, in heavyweight, there was, like, Marco Huas, Don Fry, Mark Coleman, me, Maurice Smith. You know, there were some heavy hitters there. You know, and it just seems like, you know, when that generation of fighters went away, it left a void. And, you know, that void, you know, was picked up a little bit of that slack by Randy Couture, but he's a small heavyweight. Mm-hmm. And then it was, you know, when he dropped down, it really left like a void. And, you know, not to take anything away from Tim Silva, you know, I mean, Tim's doing what he needs to do to win belts. And, you know, but just one of those anomalies. You know, and as far as nagging injuries, you know, I mean, there's little stuff. You know, there's little stuff. My hands hurt sometimes and, you know, feel pretty damn arthritic. You know, and I got, you know, a knee that kind of gets tricky on me. But, you know, I mean, there's nothing on my body that is so injured or so beat up that it's not overcome. And, you know, I just feel very fortunate for that.
Well, one more time, Mark Kerr is going to be fighting Mike Whitehead this Saturday, November 2nd in Portland, Oregon on the IFL's team semifinal championship. And Mark, of course, competing in the super fight, one of the super fights of the evening. Mark, we really appreciate you coming on the show and best of luck this weekend.
Hey, thanks, guys, for having me on, and anytime, man, my phone's always open to you guys.
Okay, take care.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
All right, thank you.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit bodogfight.com for more details.
The controversy.
Jeff, last chance to call out Frank Mierjo.
Yeah.
Frank Mier, I want to piece your ass. That's for sure. No, Frank Mier's a stud, man.
The challenges.
Hey, have you heard from Frank Mier yet?
Well, you called him out on our show, buddy. Don't you remember?
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
I saw
Frank
Saturday,
forget the 170, Joe. Let's get back. Get you back up to 260, 280. Hit the cheeseburgers hard.
Full Contact Fighter Radio. If you can't take the heat, get out of the sauna. Kitchen.
Hey, this is Kurt Batman Pellegrino, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the Butcher, Bill Mahood, King of the Cage, Canada's matchmaker. Bill, how are you doing today?
Really good, Kelsey. How about you?
I can't complain. Thank you very much. Of course, King of the Cage Canada's got a show coming up this weekend in Prince George at the CN Center called Icebreaker, and Bill, you being the matchmaker, I wanted to ask you a few questions about the card. First off, the main event, Kevin Matterson versus Jason St. Louis. I know it was planned that Tim Thurston was going to be fighting, but now it's Matterson stepping in on short notice.
Yeah, our main event's gone through quite some changes. I mean, originally we had the Prince George boy, Travis the Gladiator Galbraith, and he was going to be fighting for the world King of the Cage title. Then we had an injury. James Lee got hurt, so we had a replacement. And then Travis got pulled up to Pride.
Yeah.
So then we had to switch our main event completely. We had Jason St. Louis in there and Tim Thurston, and then Tim Thurston got injured. So Kevin Matterson has jumped in.
And yeah, you got to give props to a guy like Kevin Matterson. Although he's in shape, he just fought in Apex against Lars Mark Bosek, but he's a Joe Dirksen protege, I guess, if you will, for people out there who might not be familiar with Kevin Matterson.
Yeah, he's a tough guy at 155. They're going to do a catch weight. Jason St. Louis is coming down to a lower weight. It should be a really good main event.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the other fights on the card I wanted to get into a little bit. Garrett Davis is taking on Jeremy, I hope I'm pronouncing the last name correct, Dimon or?
Diamond,
okay.
Just like the stone, only spelled different.
Okay. Now, Garrett's been on quite the streak the last couple of years, really turned his career around. I think he's won something like 7 or 8 fights in a row. I was fortunate enough to see his last couple fights here in Vancouver that he's been in. Took out Miles, great fight against Miles Merola most recently. For those people who might not be familiar with Garrett, Bill, why don't you fill us in a little bit about Garrett Davis and then, of course, his opponent, Jeremy Diamond.
Well, I mean, Garrett's been fighting for quite some time. He's a Marcus Suarez student. And, he used to just simply take fights and fight and, you know, have a little fun with it. In the last while here, he's really gotten serious. He's dedicated himself to his training. He's come down in weight, and he's just, you know, trying to do everything to get his skill package together. He's been boxing with Tony Pep in Vancouver, continuing to train with Marcus. You can't get a better Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach than that. Wrestling with, Uvic and getting Nick Lingala on board. And, I mean, he's just getting serious, and the results are evident.
And his opponent, Jeremy Diamond, what can you tell us about him?
Well, Jeremy Diamond is a tough kid out of New Mexico. We brought him up to fight in our Vernon show October 6th, and we threw him in there, and he was in against Ed Nuno from Team Quest. And we didn't know what to expect, but wow, I mean, Jeremy ended up losing a decision, but man, he had Nuno in trouble a couple of times. He's just super tough. I mean, he took some big, big shots and recovered. So we were really impressed, and we thought that, it would be a great matchup.
Now, one of the names that struck me right away is Rory McDonald, and I've really been anxious to see this kid fight. 17-year-old out of Kelowna, trains at Team Toshito. There's been some hype in the last few months about him. Have you had a chance to see him fight before, Bill, and maybe tell us a little bit about Rory McDonald?
Yeah, I've brought Rory up to Prince George to get one of his first one or two fights there against one of my boys. And at that point in time, I think he was 16. Rory he's just a phenom. I mean, you wouldn't believe the kid has the skill package he has at 17 years old. He's in there. I mean, he's rolled with a number of guys that I know, like full-blown men, and taps them on the mats. He's got good stand-up. I mean, David Lee's just done wonders bringing this kid along. I think we can see expect to see really great things with him. Now, with that said, I mean, he's got his work cut out for him on Friday with Yoon Heal, which is another Marcus Suarez student.
Mm-hmm. And maybe tell us a little bit about Yoon then.
Well, I mean, Yoon's, he's a real, traditional Marcus Suarez student. I mean, you're going to see great jiu-jitsu out of this kid. He's very, very fit. He's a Korean kid, so he's kind of going in following the Dennis Kang footsteps.
Yeah.
We've brought him down to Idaho to fight, where he had a crazy match. He ended up losing at the end, but, just great heart. He's got a little bit of a mixed record, but he's a student, and he's able to dedicate a little more time to training now. His game, again, in the gym and such, has just been, taking leaps and bounds over the last, 6-7 months. So it should be interesting to see him. And he's pretty serious about, about doing something with mixed martial arts.
Now, back to Rory, just briefly, quickly here. When you look at the young mixed martial arts stars, up-and-coming stars that people talk about in Canada, the most notable, of course, is Chris Horodecki. He's had international experience, Team Tompkins, very successful team out of London, Ontario. And then some people are starting to draw some comparisons between Rory McDonald and Chris. At this point, Bill, do you feel that that's perhaps putting too much pressure on a kid like Rory? Or from what you know of him, do you think he's well-prepared for that kind of hype, and do you think it's warranted?
Well, you know, I think that that David Lee has been doing a wonderful job with this kid. You know, he comes, he's very humble. He comes to fight. All he really wants to do is just fight and get better. So I don't think he worries a whole lot about the hype. I do think the hype is warranted. I mean, I've seen Horodecki fight, and that kid is, you know, he's explosive. I think that Rory's possibly a little more technical,
uh-huh.
And Horodecki's just a little more, you know, explosive and kind of wild now. You know, how that ends up in the fight, sometimes being wild and explosive, you know, makes for better fight, and sometimes being technical gets you the win. So I think it's a good comparison, and I think Rory's, we're going to see big things out of him when he gets an opportunity to, you know, take it to the next level and get onto a bigger stage.
The next fighter I wanted to ask you about is Matt Leo, and I've seen Matt Leo, I saw him compete in a grappling tournament in Edmonton, and now I guess it was... might have even been almost 2 years ago now, but there was literally people in the crowd oohing and aahing with some of his maneuvers he was doing, and it was quite a display of grappling. He hasn't fought a lot in MMA at this point, and I think he's even been competing even less in the last little while. What can you tell us about Matt for those people who don't know too much about him, where he's been training out of, etc., and his opponent Ryan Hare?
Well, I mean, Matt started out with Jason Dara. And he was involved with Evolution there in Vernon, and Matt's just one of those, you know, naturally gifted kids. He's very slight. I mean, his natural fight weight probably be 135. We're matching him this time at 140. He's got some great jiu-jitsu. I mean, the biggest problem being at 135 is he's always fighting outside of his weight class. I mean, his losses have been, you know, to Hardeep Singh, who is like a 155-pounder. He made Matt look, you know, tiny in that fight. Matt's biggest strength is his ability on the ground. I mean, he's another one of these, you know, little guys, almost like not to the skill level, say, of a Jeff Glover, but the same kind of jiu-jitsu, you know, very flowing, lots of mobility, you know, great off his back. Matt also has some good punching ability. I mean, when he fought Hardeep Singh, he's a big 155er. I mean, he dumped him in, I think it was in the second round. So, I mean, the boy can throw as well. Now he's training out at Revolution in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
Which is a team that I'm, you know, involved with there. I mean, we've got Todd Gallenberg and Tyler Jackson, Coulthard Gill, Caleb Starnes. I mean, the team, you know, Cajun Johnson's down there now with them. But the team is just, you know, it's blowing up. It's going off the hook. So he's getting some great training.
Now, you mentioned Cajun Johnson, and I noticed on the poster I don't know if it's a current poster or older poster, Cajun was on the front. Is he going to be fighting on this card? I don't see him in the lineup anymore.
No, our poster was you know, done up when Travis was still on the card. We had Cajun and Cody Krause on the card, another, you know, fairly notable Prince George fighter. Travis got pulled up to Pride. Cody got a horrific groin injury in training, and Cajun, we just simply, nobody wanted to fight the guy. You know, so he's on a little bit of a tear here as well.
Now, what are some of the other names, some of the other matchups that maybe I haven't tossed at you yet that are worthy of mention that fans who are going to be going up to the card in Prince George or, you know, watching it on TV at a later date, what are some of the other fighters people should be looking for?
We got kind of a really neat one here in, again, a newcomer named Tim Hogue. And he's out of Edmonton. He actually trains with Travis Galbraith, who's now moved to Edmonton. Tim's a 265-pound just monster. He's a big guy. He's got, you know, that big football bodybuilder slash kind of build. And we're putting him in with another New Mexican, Jesse Jones, who I haven't seen Jesse yet, but from what I've understand, he's like another 250-plus-pound guy, not an ounce of fat on him.
Mm-hmm.
Both these guys like to swing. So, I mean, anytime you get, you know, two really big guys in the cage like that and you want to go mix it up, it makes for, you know, makes for fireworks. So that's going to be one of my ones I'm kind of really looking forward to see. We've got another Prince George boy, Terry Vieira. He's had a few fights now. Actually, he fought Rory McDonald in his very first fight, and he actually had him in trouble at the beginning with strikes, and then Rory composed himself, got the takedown and the submission. and he's going to be fighting one of Lee Mien's kids, Kim Tamaki, who's known for, you know, for being just a little fire plug.
Yeah, veteran guy.
145-pound guy comes out there and just leaves it all in the cage. So that's going to be one of my favorite ones as well.
Now, you guys are going back into Edmonton November 26th for a show at the AgriCom, and you've had several cards in Edmonton, quite a few now in Calgary, and a few in Prince George. And I see on the poster that what's being headlined right now is one of the main events, or one of the main fights, is Ricardo Francois versus Jason Day. Is that fight still a go, Bill?
Yes. At this point, it is still a go.
And is the line of thinking here, Jason Day versus Ricardo Francois, I mean, Travis beat Ricardo Francois for the King of the Cage Canada light heavyweight title. Is this possibly looking towards the winner gets a rematch if it's Francois or Jason Day gets a shot?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's something we'll probably, you know, hang in front of the boys, you know, go out there and put on a good show, and, you know, maybe the winner can look at, you know, taking over the number one contender spot again. I mean, I think that, you know, Travis has got a little bit of a stranglehold on that right now. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see who wants to, you know, to brush up and challenge him for it.
Is there any other fights that you can tell us that are coming up on the November 26th card, or is that still a little bit too far away that you haven't got anything?
Yeah, it's a little too far away with Prince George happening this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of putting all our energy, you know, into the Prince George card. And then we've got, you know, the November 26th card in Edmonton, and then we've got a January card coming up in Quebec. So yeah. We're pretty busy. I think King of the Cage is, you know, in 207, we're going coastal.
Yeah, and that leads right into my next question. I know that recently it's been announced that King of the Cage Canada is going to be doing some joint promotional work with Freedom Fight, and that you're going to be doing a show out of Quebec, I believe, in Hull. Is that right? In 2007,
yeah.
In January. So maybe tell us a little bit about that, and what was the process behind King of the Cage deciding to go out east after finally, being in Western Canada predominantly for its first couple of years?
Well, I mean, you know, you got to walk before you run, and Ken Koops, the owner of King of the Cage Canada, I mean, he has the rights coast to coast for King of the Cage.
Mm-hmm.
So it only makes sense now for us to, you know, once they've got their feet wet in the industry, and, you know, are starting to learn. Now we've brought some people on, like myself, on board who've been around for a while, and we're just really trying to grow the brand in Canada. And the next step would be, you know, we do a good job in Alberta. We've moved out into British Columbia with Prince George and Vernon. We've got shows. We're looking at going to the Lower Mainland as well as into the interior and a couple of other locations. We want to do shows in Manitoba. We want to go back in where it's sanctioned into Quebec, as well as move into the Maritimes.
And that, I should mention or ask you, there was some tentative plans for King of the Cage to do a show in Vancouver, and then those didn't materialize. There were some sanctioning issues here in Vancouver in general with the sport of mixed martial arts. It was undergoing a review by City Council and the Athletic Commission. As far as you know, Bill, is there going to be some, has there been progress in that? It looks like it's full ahead here in Vancouver as far as mixed martial arts goes next year.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you know, everything is a full go. And I mean, it really never, there really was never a problem other than the city, and I believe a couple concerned city councilmen wanted to, you know, have a look at liability issues and such and just make sure that, that everything was done according to, you know, to the law. And, you know, they had their peak and everything is completely, you know, 100% kosher, and, you know, they are giving out licenses and dates and such for 2007, and we very much are in the process of wanting to be one of those people.
Now, speaking of Vancouver mixed martial arts scene, Ryan Diaz was the King of the Cage Canada Bantamweight Champion, 145 pounds. And I've noticed, I haven't seen Ryan fight. He fought Nam Phan, I believe, in the States a little while ago. He was supposed to fight Uriah Faber. Has there been any discussions with Ryan in regards to defending his title in a King of the Cage Canada show soon?
Yeah, there's been lots of discussion. I mean, once someone wins a title, we do really want to support them, you know, going out and doing other things. Ryan, I think, was very intent on getting a world King of the Cage title shot. And, you know, that's fallen through a couple of times due to, you know, opponents' injuries and problems of that sort, which kind of put off a title defense because of, you know, we were hoping to be able to get in the fight for that world title. Now that, you know, that's kind of on hold, we're hoping to get him in there right away for a defense, because I think Ryan won his title December, you know, coming up on a year ago now.
Yeah.
So we really do want to see you know, see him defending that title, and I think fans really want to see that as well. I mean, Ryan is he's an incredibly talented fighter. He's incredibly exciting, and you know, we definitely want to get him in the cage again as soon as we can.
Now, Bill, you're the King of the Cage Canada matchmaker. When you bring up American champions like Mac Danzig, the lightweight King of the Cage world champion, and one of their most notable, if not their most well-known star fighter, do you have an input in that as far as bringing up King of the Cage world champions from the States? Are you involved in that process? And if so, are we going to see someone like Mac Danzig or some of their other world champions competing in Canada?
Yeah, well, I mean, Terry has a really good relationship with Ken, and, you know, he's willing to, you know, help out the Canadian King of the Cage organization in bringing up, you know, really notable, big-name, exciting fighters. And that's why you've seen guys like Mac Danzig. I mean, we love him. He's just an incredible fighter,
yeah.
Great person. And, you know, we love bringing him up for fights, as well as, you know, some of the other bigger-name, you know, world King of the Cage champions. Terry's excellent in you know, in helping and spread those guys around and use that name recognition to help build King of the Cage in Canada. So yeah, you can definitely expect to see other guys coming up. There's even talk. Ken's trying to talk me into possibly fighting Warpath here in the new year.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting matchup.
I think that could be really interesting.
would you be going up to heavyweight, or has Warpath been fighting at light heavyweight?
No, Warpath had just come in like Warpath does, and I think I just kind of be a whole lot littler. But I think it'd be somewhat interesting.
Well,
might be a whole lot of fun.
You took the wind out of my sails for my last question. I wanted to ask you about Team Revolution, but that was my final question was going to be, what does it look like the Butcher is going to be jumping back into the octagon?
Well, the Butcher might be actually fighting in Russia here coming up, but that's all kind of, you know, still in the works. I can't say when or what or how, but I was in Russia with Dennis Kanger maybe, I don't know, 18 months, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and absolutely loved it over there. And we're talking with the Russians. We're talking with the Australians to get me back there. We're looking at maybe doing something here in Canada, but I've definitely got a few more fights left in me. I don't want to be turning into a promoter manager only yet.
Yeah. Well, for sure, the Warpath fight, immediately, I think, would get a lot of people in the seats, especially if it was in your hometown of Prince George.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're looking at doing. We're looking at booking another date back here in Prince George, probably in March, and we're thinking of maybe doing something like that up here.
Well, my final question then for you is just to see what's going on with Team Revolution. For some people who maybe aren't fully aware, Team Revolution, in a relatively short period of time, has really become one of the more notable Canadian fight teams. And you mentioned some of the members, Tyler Jackson, Todd Gallenberg, Caleb Starnes, etc., Coulter Gill. What is there anything on the horizon that you can fill, like, maybe give us a little insight into what's in store for Team Revolution in the next little bit?
Oh, yeah, we have so many plans. We've got some really big fights booked right now that we'll have to let the organizations announce.
Okay.
But you're going to be able to see Todd Gallenberg fighting on a huge stage for, you know, a fairly notable title. Tyler Jackson, again, is going to be fighting on a very large televised show. We've got Ben Greer, which is another one of our guys, is going to be moving up and again fighting for a title. Tyler Jackson, Ben Greer, Todd Gallenberg, Coulter Gill's heading back to Japan to do yet another Heroes appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb Starnes, the UFC still loves this guy. You know, he had a tough going on the last one, but we're going to see him back in the UFC. And we've got a whole lot up and coming guys. Timmy Thurston will get over his injury and be back in there. And we must have a stable of another, 15 or 20 guys that are up and coming that, you know, are going to be busting out on the scene here in 207.
And for some of the people who are perhaps listening from the Lower Mainland, British Columbia area, I believe Team Revolution has two gyms open now, correct?
Yeah, the Chilliwack gym isn't actually, the doors aren't open, but
okay.
It will be open very soon. They're just finishing up some zoning issues, and the Langley Portel's operation has been up now for, God, a good part of the year.
Okay.
And they are beautiful gyms.
Yeah, and the website, if people want to check it out, is, Bill?
revolutionfightteam.com.
Okay. Well, Bill the Butcher Mahood, we appreciate you coming on the program once again to let us in on what's going on in King of the Cage Canada the next couple months, and hopefully we'll see you back in action in 2007.
Yeah, and everyone out there can get their updates at kingofthecage.ca for the Canadian updates and .com for the U.S. updates.
All right, Bill, thanks again.
Good stuff. Thank you.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, as always, some interesting comments from some of our guests. And, you know, and I've made mention of this in a couple of the interviews that we've done over the last couple of weeks, and it really sounds like I'm plugging the IFL relentlessly, but, you know, I gotta say, as far as cards that aren't the UFC or Pride, this card is just really outstanding, and there's some amazing matchups. Of course, we featured some guys like Mark Kerr and Alex Schoenhauer, Mike Pyle on the program. They've been guests, but even outside of that, there's some great fights.
So when are we going to get to watch this thing on the telly, is the question.
I'm not sure, actually. I don't think, because there's such a delay for Sportsnet, I don't know about Fox in the States, but I know for Sportsnet Canada, it usually seems like there's a bit of a delay, and I think they're just now announced the last round of IFL fights, so I'm guessing it will still be a few months. Okay, well, here it is. It's now they've got the Sportsnet Canada schedule. So I'm sorry for our American listeners. On the IFL website, they don't have... I can't find it where it's going to be on Fox Sports. But November 4th, 11th, 18th, and 25th, which is four consecutive Saturdays, there's going to be IFL shown up here in Canada. They're going to be showing Jeremy Horn versus Matt Lindland, which is the most notable fight on that schedule. And then, like I said, the last round of fights. So probably, I'm guessing then that it'll probably be 2 or 3 months until we can see this card on Sportsnet.
I guess that's one of my only problems with the IFL's model is that, you know, watching fights after they've happened is kind of like kissing your sister. You know, it's not the ideal situation. So I'm not sure. I don't know if they'll ever be able to, unless they have a live fight night. I don't know if they'll ever be able to pull off that sort of success that the UFC has on live television. But I can't see that as being an insurmountable obstacle, necessarily.
Well, I think you have to bear in mind, too, that you're coming from the perspective of a hardcore MMA fan, and that's true. Of course, it's always better to watch it live, but when you look at the pay-per-view market right now, one could say it's almost saturated, and would the IFL, unless they offered an extremely low pay-per-view price, would they at this point be able to get a lot of people buying pay-per-views outside of, like I said, MMA hardcore fans? And then also along that same thread, then you've got it, hardcore MMA fans are going to watch it regardless. And then the third point is that they're introducing their product to new fans and people who are just by fluke watching Sportsnet or watching Fox Sports down in the States, and then they, you know, get introduced to these fighters and the IFL brand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you necessarily have to do it on pay-per-view. You do it live on cable. Right.
Well, yeah, obviously that would be ideal for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And I guess I guess the interesting question would be, what's their relationship with Fox Sports? And is that what are the logistics surrounding a live broadcast? Is that even a possibility?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that eventually you would think that definite possibility. I think right now the reason that Fox Sports or Sportsnet Canada. The reason they probably like the tape version is then you can show it at various different times dependent on region, right? Like if you look up and you're in Canada, there's four different sports nets. It's by region. So then, therefore, each network can show it at a different time and they have different obligations. Like out here in the West, Sportsnet Pacific for list of American listeners, etc. You know, they'll show Vancouver Canucks NHL games, but you won't see that on Sportsnet
west, which is more Alberta and Saskatchewan, I guess. So I believe that's why they like having the taped, so that it gives them more flexibility in their programming.
Yeah, well, I think you can always rerun it as many times as possible, but it would be interesting to create buzz around an event. You know, you have one live show every month or one live show every couple months. And the IFL is perfectly suited to that because of the number of teams that are going to come in a year with the league expanding. Ideally, that's the way you want to get it out. You know, they have pro wrestling and that kind of crap on television. Why can't they, sometimes live events? So why can't they have, why can't they have this kind of event?
Well, and I agree, and I think you'll see that. I mean, if you look at the success that Spike and the UFC have had together, there's no doubt in my mind that as the sport continues to grow, if it continues to grow, that will eventually happen, and that's great. One thing I do want to mention that really ticks me off talking about this is, you know, the fact that they're, you know, able to see the fights live is Pride Bushido. Again, we're not going to be able to see it till a week later. Like, what's up with that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't understand that.
Well, I think what they got to realize is that people who are interested in watching Bushido probably won't wait a week to watch it.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
and just leave it. You just leave it there, and will it be even worth their while having it on pay per view after a while? I'm not sure.
I just don't. Again, we've discussed this before, and perhaps it's annoying some of the listeners that we're bringing it up again and debating it again or complaining about it again. But I really don't understand it, and I don't know if it's a financial issue, if you have to pay more money to show a live broadcast. I mean, they do it with the regular Pride cards. I don't know if it's Pride misevaluating or underestimating the popularity of Pride cards here, if they found that Bushido cards haven't done as well. But this card, you've got the final, semifinals and finals of the Welterweight Grand Prix. This week, you've got Takanori Gomi defending his title. I mean, I don't understand what the rationale can possibly be. Or maybe it's with viewer's choice or whatever the provider is down in the States. I'm not sure, but...
Well, it makes absolutely no sense to me, because if you're going to put it on pay-per-view, then put it on at the right time. Put it on 24 hours later or whatever, you know? Because I think Trigg and Ronaldo don't even go over to Japan for Bushido's anymore. They do the voiceover off of a feed from Japan. So, do it and put it on TV. If it's going on, if you're getting it on pay-per-view, then put it on time. Like, I don't understand. That's just an obvious inconsistency that grates on me. You know, there's no reason that they can't do it. There's no reason that they can't produce it that night, because it's on for us. The live show for us is on in the early morning. So they could very easily have it done for a Sunday evening pay-per-view. And what a better way to spend Sunday evening with your family than watching Pride Bushido.
Well, exactly. You should be writing Pride commercials, buddy. You know, sit down with your turkey, your family, your beloved ones, and watch some Pride Bushido. And, like, have some fighters kick down the walls or something like that and run into the living room.
Steal your turkey.
Yeah, steal your turkey.
Help you run the wrong business.
I know. I should be writing commercials, doing marketing, etc. But let's get back into the Mark Kerr interview a little bit, Brennan. You know, obviously, it's far too early to tell. We haven't seen him compete yet against Mike Whitehead, which will be a great challenge for him. But let's say, hypothetically, that Mark Kerr is able to get by Mike Whitehead, or even if he loses but still puts up a good fight and looks impressive. Do you think this could be the beginnings of Mark Kerr? You asked him about the heavyweight division and the lack of heavyweights in the United States. Do you foresee Marker, you know, getting back into the title picture?
Well, I think there are always these guys around who you're... I guess Kerr is one of these fighters. People that pop into my mind, like Rico Rodriguez, an obvious guy to step right in back into the UFC, but he's kind of been there. You know, he was the UFC champion. I think Kerr, you can go back far enough. He goes back far enough into the UFC where not a lot of people even remember him as a UFC fighter. So he's someone who could, who could step in and be, you know, I don't know if he would, depending on his fitness, could challenge for a title, but I'm sure he could be thrown into the mix, you know. And the problem with the UFC right now is they don't even have enough heavyweight fighters to build people up for a title fight, you know.
Yeah.
So, that... I think he would be a definite quick fix for an organization like that. Unfortunately, I don't see him fitting into the IFL because, you know, he could fight in super fights, I suppose. But these tend to have been, in the history of the IFL in the last year, they tend to have been different fighters. So I'm not sure he certainly I don't think would fit into a team. And I think Kerr's got to come in and get back on his game and make his money while he can.
Well, I think he mentioned that they had some preliminary discussions about him possibly taking over a team, and I think in that role, you could hypothetically see him, as some of the other coaches have in the NFL, fighting each other. I mean, Don Fry is a new coach. There's a matchup that becomes an obvious one right away. But as far as the upper echelon of heavyweight rankings, whether or not he would compete against some of the other IFL's heavyweights, that's a good question if the IFL wants to do that. If you actually survey the landscape of IFL's heavyweights, there are some notable names because I think even these guys themselves would admit it, that there's some notable names because there isn't that many heavyweights, household names, that's for certain, in North America. But if you look at the IFL, they've got Christoph Szczesny, who's a TKO heavyweight champion. They've got Brent Rothwell, who is arguably, or many people speculate that he could be one of the best American heavyweights. You've got Devin Cole there as well, who recently lost Alan Goez, who's been fighting at heavyweight in the IFL. And then if you look at the UFC heavyweight division, it's got Tim Sylvia and Jeff Munson. Chia Kongo was apparently being groomed somewhat by the UFC to be a contender, and he could still come back, etc., but he lost to Carmelo Marrero. Apparently Carmelo Marrero is going to be fighting Gabriel Gonzaga, another UFC aspiring heavyweight contender, on the December 30th card. So you're absolutely right. If you throw a Mark Kerr in the mix, if he can come back, if he can be conditioned, if he can regain some of his previous status, I do think he has the potential to be a star, if you will. And the same applies to Rico Rodriguez as well. We've discussed this before. If he ever got back into serious shape, he is probably, arguably, the most gifted as far as skill wise heavyweight in the United States.
And apparently he's getting that back down there. He fought his first professional boxing match recently, and fought what was it, 275 or 265?
I think so. Yeah.
So he's right around in there again. And you know, guys like Rico, and I guess Rico also has a problem because he's been so outspoken against the UFC and is very willing to speak his mind and things like that. And I don't think Kerr comes with any of that baggage, but the UFC is, I think, in terms of the heavyweights, have dug themselves into a hole. They've dug themselves into a hole because I don't think people are going to abide any more than building up their heavyweight fighters or trying to build them up on pay-per-view cards, because the fights have potential. The fights have the potential, especially in the last 2 years, of being just terrible fights. So it's fights that you don't want to pay to watch. And secondly, it seems like on their TV shows, they've been trying to build up lighter fighters, you know, bringing back the 155s and having a lot of smaller fighters fight. So, to be quite honest, Kerr would be a perfect fit because you really don't have to build him up in the same way that you do for a young guy. And even if he can go, he doesn't have to win his fights, even if he can go and put in a good fight and hang in there, you know, you can build guys up by having them fight him as long as he can put on a good show. So, you know, It's tough. I think they got to dig themselves out of a deep hole, and I actually don't know exactly how they're going to do it.
Well, and I guess we should be mentioning Brandon Vera. For some reason, my instinct is to perceive of him as a 205 fighter. I'm not sure why that is. I know he's discussed the possibility of moving down to 205 if his success at heavyweight was limited, but he's going to be fighting Frank Mir coming up as well. So, you know, we should mention Brandon Vera as far as the heavyweight picture goes, but...
Mm-hmm. But again, Vera's going to fight at heavyweight, and he should fight at heavyweight until he either wins the belt or loses, and when he loses, he has no reason to go down to light heavy right now, but in his first loss, he's going to go down to light heavy, I guarantee it. And then he's gone, right? So, again, we certainly can't overlook Brandon Vera, and he's great, great to watch, but took a long time to build him up, and again, his fights looked good, but they didn't look good because they're really competitive fights. They looked good because they were, you know, flat. They involved some flashy knockouts.
All right, buddy, you enjoy Halloween, and we'll talk to you later this week.
Have a spooktacular evening.